Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live, and today I have a wonderful guest named Charles Troy. He is actually visiting in San Francisco to take part in a wonderful Cole Porter gala that was yesterday, and I asked him to sit and do a love letters with me because his story is so interesting and so inspiring because he is doing exactly what he wants to do, which is, and I'm going to just send it right to you. You say what you do, Charles.
I'm doing multimedia presentations on musical theater subjects, and that's my passion, and I'm doing it.
So your expertise, you're beyond Cole Porter.
Correct.
You're a Broadway historian? Broadway,
yes.
Musical historian.
Absolutely.
Okay. And just tell how that came about, because you did mention last night at dinner that when you were 13, you saw something. So start with, like, what were your parents like musically, and what was life like at home in that creative way?
They weren't really very interested in music at all. My mother did play operas on our record player.
But they were interested in you.
They were interested in me.
Yeah,
of course. No, they were very good parents. And then when I was 13, on a Saturday night, I was 13, so what did I have to do on a Saturday night, right? So turned on the FM radio, fiddled with the dial, and happened upon a show that played original Broadway cast recordings. I had never seen a show before. I had never heard a show before. Mm. And somehow I stopped there and listened. And by the end of the hour, I was hooked. The show was Fiorello. This was 1959. It had just opened, and the cast recording was fresh. I was just enamored of the idea of telling the story in songs.
So I'm curious about something, because you say there was no particular musical background in your life, mm-hmm. but you heard this and you were hooked. It grabbed you. Isn't that kind of interesting?
Well,
I
did like to write poetry, humorous poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the lyrics that affected me.
I mean,
Fiorello is written by Sheldon Harnick, the lyricist, and it's so clever.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the way it told a story. It wasn't just clever, but it told a story. And there was something in me that gravitated to telling a story.
Okay, so it wasn't necessarily the music got you. It was the way of communication.
No, I'm really not very sophisticated in music. I respond to tunes the way most people do. If they can whistle them out of the theater,
yes,
I love them.
Yes. Okay, so that explains why Cole Porter also, because that is so lyric heavy and internal rhyme. And
exactly.
It's,
exactly.
I see. Now, what? So they took you to see?
Well, what happened was, since I was so hooked, for our next family vacation, we went to New York, mm-hmm. and I saw Fiorello. Actually, I thought it would be my first Broadway show, but we slipped in Bye Bye Birdie just before because it had just opened. And I still remember it, mm-hmm. 45 years later?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yes.
55.
So how lovely that your parents, when I said before, but they were interested in you, that they were the kind of parents when you showed a passion for something, they acted on it and gave it to you.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yes,
so
they were terrific.
What was your life like from there, kind of in a few words, because I want to get to some of what you do now.
Well, I collected everything I could and read everything I could on musical theater, and
mm-hmm.
by 2 years later, I decided I wanted to be a Broadway lyricist. My senior year in high school, I wrote our school show, which had never been student written before. It's still student written now, so that's one of my claims to fame, I suppose. Then I went to University of Michigan, and my senior year there, I also wrote an original show. So I thought I was primed.
Mm-hmm.
I went to New York, joined a musical theater workshop that was being run by a fellow named Lehman Engel, a musical theater conductor at the
mm-hmm.
time. And his idea was that musicals could be analyzed and replicated, just like they have screenwriting classes now. He had classes in musical theater. Now it's commonplace. He was the first. I signed up. I wrote some songs, collaborated with some people in the class. I was very pleased with what I was doing, but I couldn't help but notice there were lots of people in the class. They were very talented, certainly maybe as talented or more than I was, and they were 35 or 40, and they hadn't gotten anywhere. And then Hair opened, and I thought, okay, I love Hair, but if this is the future of musicals, this is not what I write.
Oh, okay, so what was the distinguishing feature of Hair that made you say it's going in a direction that's not for me?
Well, I mean, the lyrics are certainly constructed more stream of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
They were clever. They told interesting stories, but just
mm-hmm.
not in a way that I was comfortable with. And
mm-hmm.
if it was rock, it seems to me rock has a different sensibility. And frankly,
sure.
rock through everybody who was writing at the time, from Irving Berlin to Jerry Herman. Everybody got thrown by rock.
Well, because that shift in what the public wants, that wasn't necessarily their talents are very specific as a rule.
Oh, absolutely. And it's usually what you grow up with, you know. So you can't suddenly change and write a rock musical. It's just not in you. Anyway, so I went back to Chicago, was a copywriter for a little while, and then fell to my father's blandishments and entered the family business, which was textiles. Mm-hmm. I was a lousy businessman.
Did you sell or did you design?
No, neither. We were a distribution house. Mm-hmm. So I kind of contented myself by organizing the business. I like to organize things, but I wasn't very good at seeing business opportunities, making deals, anything like that. When my brother joined the business 8 years later, he was much better at it. And I spent the 80s, frankly, pretty miserable. As my brother took over the business, my father died in 1982, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing there. Mm-hmm. And finally, in 1990, I thought, and my mother was dying by this time, I thought, look, there's nobody left to please, so why don't I please myself? So I sold my half of the business out to my brother, took a payout over a long period of time so I could kind of replicate my income and mm-hmm. figured, okay, now I got to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. My brother-in-law, Marty, who actually was here for the show, drove down from British Columbia, was at the time living in Chicago.
That's so adorably loyal.
Oh, my goodness. I'm astonished. Anyway, but he...
He's a trumpet player, right?
Yes, and quite a lot of skill. Anyway, at the time he was a videotape editor and an electronics hobbyist, and he had bought into the early Mac design programs. At the time they were called desktop publishing. And he had collaborated with me on a little pamphlet for our business when I was still in it. I thought, this seems intriguing. So when I left the business, I thought, I have no idea what I'm doing, but let me just kind of go over to his house on a daily basis, play with this, and see if it leads me anywhere. And I realized after a couple months that graphic design was a skill that I possessed as well, that it was really, in a sense, like a visual equivalent of the stuff that I wrote.
Yes, I was just going to say that. It's not so far removed, exactly.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, I like to write with puns and wit, and I found that puns and wit could be expressed visually as well as in words. Yes. So I realized I had a talent for it, and after a few more months of practicing, reading up all this, I basically bought my own system, hung up my shingle, and became a self-employed graphic designer. Made it work. That was 1990. I made it work for a number of years, and in a sense, I'm still doing it. But in 2003, I got...
Well, you're doing it in your presentations, for sure. Your audio, your visual part.
Absolutely. It's basically just an extension. But at this point, I was really a distance from musical theater. Mm-hmm. I raised children. We hadn't been going to shows. One of our children is deaf, so we mm-hmm. couldn't even take our kids to shows because it didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. In 2003, I got a client that was a senior learning center in the Chicago area.
Oh, as a design client.
A design client. I was putting together their class catalog. And their class catalog, I couldn't help but notice, had lots of classes in musical theater. Mm-hmm. And I thought, as they say in a chorus line, I can do that. So I thought, I'm going to start doing these classes. So at first I didn't like everybody else, popped in the CD, popped in the DVD, and that was it. But then I heard about a program called Keynote, which is the Mac equivalent of PowerPoint, and how you could incorporate everything in there. So I thought, okay. And then my wife had also said, my first rudimentary classes, I was passing out sheets with the lyrics. And she said, and she's a former teacher, so she said, why have them look down at the lyrics they can look up at the screen? So I started putting the lyrics on the screen. And so all of this kind of came together. I had the graphic design skills, so I would design what I wanted to say in Photoshop, brought it all into Keynote, put it together, and now I have these multimedia presentations.
Okay, so the interesting thing about your presentations, I thought, is that you have really become, so to speak, a historian. I mean, that's really what you do. You're teaching.
I had always been fascinated by the background of musicals. If you think about it, musical theater is an art form in which virtually all the great works come from somewhere else. So you can see how the creative process went with the people who wrote it. If you look at Oklahoma, for instance, it's based on a play called Green Grow the Lilacs. And if you read the play Green Grow the Lilacs, you can say, ah, here's where the Surrey with the Fringe on Top came from. So what I like to do in my presentations is show the page of the script from Green Grow the Lilacs, read the few lines, and say, and now here's what Oscar Hammerstein did with it, and Richard Rodgers.
Now, I was interested last night in, we were talking about, I mean, I mentioned that there was a musical that I had trouble with, and that I could just barely watch because it seemed so untrue, and it is
The Sound of Music.
And you kind of, and I said, you know, the real story of those people, because I started reading about it, knowing that that could not be. I just didn't believe they sat around singing Do a Deer with these kids. And I started reading about it, and it was so interesting. And you obviously had known about the real story.
Yes.
Say a little bit about what the real story is, because I think the difference between reality and what we see on stage is sometimes so interesting. And how did they make that shift?
I will tell you the story is essentially true in terms of Maria going to work for the captain, the captain asking to marry her, she running back to the convent because she really didn't want to get married, she wanted to be a nun, was persuaded by the Mother Superior to come back. All that is true, but it took place over a period of 12 years, from 1926
but also their personalities
to 38.
Were not what you saw on the, that was what interested me.
Ah, okay, correct. The captain, instead of being the authoritarian that we know from The Sound of Music, was actually a very sweet and low-key guy. In fact, a lax disciplinarian, supposedly.
And didn't she come to teach because the oldest one had scarlet fever? She came
correct.
To help one child, not
she
the
was
whole
a,
family.
Right, she was actually a tutor, not a governess or what, a nanny, whatever we call her now. But, so the story was inexact. But for the purposes of dramatization, Rodgers and Hammerstein and the book writers Lindsay and Krauss, of course, made changes, which everybody does. I mean, there's nothing that's ever told exactly. In my presentations, I try to be as honest as I can, but if there's something that doesn't fit into the story and it's minor, but it's off to the side, I kind of work around it. What I try to do is create a narrative out of the story.
Do you think if today that story were to have been worked into a musical, it would have been more accurate with the sournesses of the personalities and the difficulties of Maria? For example, Kiss of the Spider Woman was no cheerful business.
Maybe.
They used to cheerful things out more.
Well, but it was actually based on a German movie that had been made a couple of years earlier called Die Trapp Family. And in that, the captain had been already portrayed as a martinet. And he had passed away by this time. But Maria, wanting to protect her husband's memory, tried to lobby Lindsay and Krauss and Rodgers and Hammerstein to soften the portrayal.
These are interesting things. Okay. What is your favorite?
Of my presentations?
Yeah. I mean, no, what's your favorite? That's a dumb question, really. What are your top musicals, some of them that you really relate to most?
Of course, it always changes. When you really know a subject, it's hard to pick out one particular one. And for a long time, I kind of went with everybody and said My Fair Lady, which is great.
Yeah.
Now my favorite at the moment is South Pacific, and that's because I'm awed by the way that Oscar Hammerstein and Joshua Logan, with whom he collaborated, figured out a way to take four separate stories of James Michener and turn them into a single cohesive dramatic construction, and it's masterful. And what I respond to, as I said before, is the story and how the songs play out of the story. And I think they handled this story better than anybody else has ever handled a story in a musical.
So what is it you want to do? What does this do for you?
Well, first of all, I've always wanted to communicate to people my passion and excitement for musicals. So I'm able to do that
now. What do the musicals do for you when you're surrounded and steeped in it? How do you feel about yourself and about the world?
Well, I'm certainly exhilarated when I see a song that just hits it, that expresses exactly what the moment requires in a way that's totally original and right.
So
I start to get tingles in my body, you know, that sort of thing. So
clarity.
Yeah.
And getting the, And of course, that's what graphic design is about also. Getting the thought across. What does it do? You said you were doing this in senior living centers,
senior residences.
How did they react?
Well, it depends on the degree of challenge, let's say, of the seniors. I try not to do assisted living because, frankly, the people are not quite sharp enough to mm-hmm. take in what I'm doing. And what I do is fairly dense and complicated. Mm-hmm. But I do have some clients that are simply independent living, and they have me over every month. And I do them, and people are fine. And originally I was cautioned my presentations, which are mostly 90 minutes, that's mm-hmm. too long for seniors, but it works.
Oh,
they're
good.
They're fine with it.
Because music brings you back to your strongest self, wherever you are in life. You know, you think of a piece of music that was big when you were 16, and it takes you back to the girl you were out with that night or dancing.
Oh,
talk about that.
I'm constantly approached afterward by people who say, oh, I saw this show in 1956, and I was doing that at the time.
And I was wearing my yellow dress. And my, I mean, people
they
get
they
so
love sense. That part of it, yes.
It's a direct that and scent.
Yes, you're right. You're
get right to some core. I mean, I hear music from when I was, it doesn't matter what stage. And I feel like that person, which is really nice for older people because it makes you know who you were at your youngest, and I won't say strongest or smartest by any means, but at different stages of your life.
Well, for me, this brings me back to my greatest passion as a teenager, that mm-hmm. I love musicals and I thought I was going to be a lyricist. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen, but honestly, I feel what I'm doing now is better than what I would have done. I mean, maybe I would have gotten a show on Broadway, maybe not. But what I'm doing is so distinctive. Mm-hmm. I don't know of anybody who's doing precisely what I do. There are lots of people who are teaching about musicals, but the way I have the graphics and mm-hmm. the way I tell the story, I think, is different. So I feel like I'm doing the greatest creative work of my life, and
That's
I'm 68
wonderful.
Years old.
That's good. And so you started doing this at what age?
55.
Okay, so let's talk about this because people sometimes feel stuck
mm-hmm.
at what they're doing, and maybe it's not exactly what they want to do. And in particular, by the way, it used to be that people would retire from work at, what, 65 or 50?
Sure.
I mean, whenever it was, and the life expectancy wasn't what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And people now have the opportunity to stop doing what they were doing at any age they want, and they've still got a lot of good years and creativity ahead of them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And there's a market for.
Well, and I found there's more and more of a market. And as I created more and more of these, it wasn't just a question of creating them, which was the ultimate satisfaction still. But I wanted them heard.
Yeah.
And I thought this is very nice that a lot of people, a lot of seniors on the north side of Chicago, or north suburbs, like this. But I want this seen by a greater range of people.
So you came to San Francisco or San Rafael yesterday to dovetail or to introduce, really, set the stage for a Cole Porter afternoon.
It was
the Cole Porter Society, which is taking place here because of Noah Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And it taps into something because whatever he's done, there is not an empty chair in the audience.
Well, it was marvelous for me because, frankly, I usually do my presentations by myself, 90 minutes in a theater if I'm not doing a senior residence, and I have a loyal following, but it's still hard to get new people because they don't get what I do till I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And people have so many choices for entertainment these days.
Yes.
To get people actually in the first time, and then they get excited, and then they want to come. But this, yesterday, I was just playing off of Noah Griffin, so all I had to do was show out, roll out my presentation, and 300 new people who hadn't seen me before said, oh, I get what he does. Wow, I'd see this again.
Now, how did that feel to you, 300 new people, and then seeing what you did followed by that exceptional show?
Yeah, it was remarkable. I still, a day later, can't even absorb how remarkable a day yesterday
good.
Was.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you could hook up with other...
Yes, I mean, I'd love this to be a model going forward that I kind of ride along with something that's already done. That would be great.
Yes, because I think there are opportunities. Oh, this mm-hmm. is wonderful to hear about. It was wonderful to meet you and hear what you do and the extent of it, the details, the things that you can learn, those pesky little questions that you've always had about musical comedies, by the way, and there's never been, for me, anybody to ask about them, really. And then here is Charles, and I am probably making a pest of myself, asking things like about Bye Bye Birdie and Why does she say bye-bye, Burhi? And there's so many little questions that are all across the nation. If you Google them, you can see everybody's asking them.
Well, one of the things I like to do with my presentations is answer my questions. I know in lots of setups like senior residences, you're supposed to have a Q&A after.
Do you?
No. Mm-hmm. My basic challenge is to answer everything within the presentation. So if somebody comes up afterward and asks me something that seems like it should have been in there, I say, good point.
Next one you put it in.
I need to incorporate that.
Do you have a blog?
No, I don't have a blog. I certainly have a website, www.charlestroy.com.
Okay, let's spell that because people are one off. www.charlestroy.com. Okay. Yeah. It's a wonderful website. So you don't have you don't do like a column there where you could answer questions if people ask.
No, but I guess that's a thought.
Really?
Thanks, Janet. Maybe. Yeah. I'm so damn busy now.
I know you are. It's so nice to be able to email somebody mm-hmm. with a question. I know you're busy. That's a huge thing to do. And get an answer or even have an area where people could drop in questions, mm-hmm. by the way. You don't answer them, but you work them into your next presentation.
This is a great idea.
And then tell people, come to my next one, and I'm going to answer this question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh,
I like that.
So interesting the way this could go in so many ways. But, you know, the details of these musicals that you just don't think about.
May I talk about a real departure that I'm about to do? This is very exciting.
Please.
I made a fan in Chicago of a woman who heads a klezmer group called the Maxwell Street Klezmer Band. I'm Jewish, but not particularly observant. Nonetheless, you know, this is part of my background, mm-hmm. too. She loves musicals, loved what I do. The band has been the best klezmer band in the Midwest for more than 30 years. She came up to me and said, Charles, how about if we do a project together? Your presentation and the music this time is live, and we play it. I said, okay, what's the subject? And she said, the history of Yiddish theater.
Oh, yes.
So that's what I said, oh, yes. And I knew nothing about the subject. I read all that I could. I found, yes, there was a narrative thread in here that I could make work. It's done. It's called The Whole Megillah, the Story of the Yiddish Theater. We're doing it for the first time a week from Saturday night in South Bend, Indiana.
Oh.
Lori wanted to debut it out of town from Chicago. So anyway, and then we're going to do it in Florida, and then who knows where we'll take it. I'm very excited about this.
Oh.
This is a departure in subject matter and in how it was all put together, and it feels to me like it's going to work very well.
That sounds wonderful. And it's, again, just kind of another indication that you never have to be stuck in what you're doing. There's always some other way to reach out and expand your own self.
Absolutely.
Okay, I have a question now because I am basically about love letters.
Okay.
And I know that within every single human experience,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a wonderful one or a tragic one even, sadly enough, there are still the seeds of a love letter to someone. So this is really what I do and revel in is gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I always ask, who gets your love letter today?
Mm.
Now, you have to write a love letter. I'm going to give you some homework. Who would get your love letter today? There are so many people, and love letters aren't just romantic. In my experience, only about 10% of them are. You know, they're gratitude, they're I remember.
Well, nonetheless, I'd still have to write the first love letter to my wife. We're married 43 years. The fact is, I had some miserable years in the 80s. She stuck by me.
Okay. Miserable because you were not happy in what you were doing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then in the 90s, once I started with this, she was very supportive of, sure, leave the family business, go out on your own, figure out what you're going to
do. So that'll all be in your letter to her.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I want to say, which I always do, but I think it's important, just emotionally, in your handwriting,
mm-hmm.
and you mail it to her,
mm.
and you get out of the room when she's reading it, because
okay.
even though you know what's in it, love letters are private. And the beauty of them is they don't require anything. She doesn't have to get out of the shower to answer the phone, and she gets to keep it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then your children will have it. They last for generations. And grandchildren will know something really important, not only about you and all that you've done, but the way you love.
That sounds like a great idea. The only difference is it will be typed on the computer because I hate writing.
Well, I know you hate it if you say you hate it. But if you do that, see, the thing is, you want evidence that there was a heartbeat behind that letter. Everybody has Lucetta Bright. Nobody has your handwriting.
Mm.
Now, if you feel strongly about that and you just won't, you might try it. But if you really can't, then you'll sign it in your handwriting.
Oh, absolutely.
And maybe a little P.S., something.
Okay, fair enough.
That fills it with, so that they know that this, you know, my great-grandpa touched this.
Ah.
He might have held it to his lips before he put it in the mailbox.
Okay. All right. That's a good compromise.
So you're holding hands down the generations.
Okay.
Okay. So there are other people, too. Like, would you send, I mean, I could see a love letter to your father and mother for taking you to that first. It's a little late because they're not going to, but you could mail it to yourself. And it would be part of the treasure box.
Yeah, I agree with you. My parents, because the last 10 years of my life with the business were so frustrating, for many years, mm-hmm. I did not have as fond memories as I have now. Now I've kind of cleared it away and thought of all the stuff they did for me when I was a kid.
Oh, isn't that the way it happens?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
That's so important. You could even do that. I like encouraging people to do that. And it's, dear mom and dad, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to my children.
Okay.
Just so I can say to you all I feel and that I know now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll know what I feel about you. And I mean, there's just, it does double duty. And you are a writer.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, you've given me an assignment, Janet.
I hope you'll do it. Okay.
Absolutely.
I'd just like to know that it's in the air.
It sounds like a great idea.
You know, when you find, I mean, I've talked to Noah Griffin, who sees the original things, and you have too, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
The original things at Cole Porter. Did you talk about finding the other man, Bloom.
Ken Bloom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Talked about finding lost manuscripts.
Correct.
In his handwriting, the music on the staff in pencil, which of course is a little nerve wracking,
mm-hmm.
but it's still there. And the excitement is, I mean, handwriting just is king.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Thank you so much for doing this for me,
You're welcome.
For everybody. So until next time, I'm going to say goodbye, but I do want to say, please remember that if you think you need a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion, and it does generations of double duty. It will pass down, and your children and grandchildren or nieces and nephews or strangers, if you don't have immediate family, will learn something about you. I think that's nice. So till next time, this is Janet Gallen and
Charles Croy. Thank you so much, Janet.
Thank you. Say goodbye.